I keep having this recurring nightmare where it's November 8th, 2016, and instead of welcoming America's first female president, we instead elected an insane, corrupt, aspiring tyrant. And my son was born only a few months into the second term for Obama, a president who had his background. One parent was African and Muslim, and one parent was white, middle American, Christian, but non-practicing. And so it was pretty cool to see that the President of the United States had his background, and that would make everything better for him to grow up in. My daughter was born a couple of years into the Trump administration when the President did not look like her, didn't think like her, seemed to not think she should exist. Now, when you say that might be hyperbole, or you say that that might be exaggeration, I want to keep in mind Trump's inauguration. We went to New York as a family. We had already booked the plane tickets months before the election, before Hillary had conceded and all that stuff. But we were going to be in New York the week of the inauguration because the hotels were cheaper and we could afford it and we wanted to go. Even though New York is Trump's home city and he's born and raised there and has properties everywhere, the streets were flooded with women, men, children of all ages for the Women's March. Everywhere you go, people protesting him, signs up against him. My son held one. It was a proud moment. We all felt great. And then when we tried to leave New York, only about a week after he'd been inaugurated, the airports were backed up. Trump had tried to put in place a Muslim ban to keep people from coming and going that were in Muslim countries, and that backed up the air traffic at JFK. My wife was born into a Muslim family. Some of her relatives still are Islamic. And he was essentially saying, you're not welcome here, regardless of your beliefs, what you think, your value as a human being, the skills, the knowledge, the brains that you bring to this country. We don't want you because of where you came from. And the Muslim ban started with Iran and Sudan and some countries like that. And then, of course, it did eventually expand to Nigeria, where she would have been from. One of the first programs that he wanted to get rid of in immigration was the diversity and immigration lottery. That's what my wife's mother won, and that used it to bring herself, my wife, and some of her siblings to the United States. It was the diversity immigration lottery. That's one of the first things Trump targeted to get rid of. I don't kid myself that if Trump had been president in the 80s and 90s, when several members of her family were trying to immigrate, that we would have even met. And that's why it was so important to be against him. When my mother was in school, my parents were born in the 1950s. And so they were part of the first generation in the Southeast to experience integration. There was a black school called Lakeview, and they closed it down and combined the black kids with the Gunnersville kids that went to school there. This is not that long ago. People can remember protests. One of her best friends went to college in Tuscaloosa and can remember George Wallace going to the courthouse steps and saying, "You cannot enter," to the black girl that wanted to come there, and the federal marshals trying to turn them away and saying, "You're not welcome here. You shouldn't go to the school with the white kids." This same woman I'm talking about is a few years older than my mom, but her husband recently passed away, possibly due to coronavirus, but because he's over 70, they don't test for that in certain people if they have pre-existing conditions and health problems. When they integrated the schools, there were some protests, some people saying, "You're not welcome here. We don't want you here. You shouldn't go here. You can't come here." My mom, who's not that old, but was in high school before she'd ever went to school with somebody who was black. A few decades later, my son can go to a school in Los Angeles, a private school, on a diversity and inclusion scholarship, and they can literally strip it from him in first grade. And they can say, "You can't come back. You can't be here for first grade." And the headmaster of the school can put in an email to me, part of the reason is that parents have said they don't want him in the same classroom as their kids, and they don't want him there. My son was born in the beginning of the Obama administration, and my daughter was born in the Trump administration. It's very hard to say that things are getting better for them when my mother can be as old as high school and remember the integration of the schools, and my son, all these years later, can get thrown out of a private school partly because parents don't want him in the same classroom as their kids, by the headmaster's own admission. It's very hard to say that things are getting better. When you have the Obama administration, and for 8 years, he didn't have a single criminal indictment, arrest, not one person in his administration go to jail, and Trump has his personal attorney go to jail, his closest political advisor, Roger Stone, go to jail. Michael Flynn, his national security advisor, be indicted. Three separate campaign managers go to jail for different crimes. His charity dissolved for fraud. His university dissolved for fraud. Himself impeached for breaking the law. And Obama's still the one people think is corrupt and the one that's being investigated. It's very hard to say that things are getting better. When you're a father or a parent, you want your kids to have a better life than you had. And I think about all the stuff I used to love to do when I was a kid. I loved to go to movies. All those are closed from coronavirus. Some people are saying AMC and Regal and Cinemark, they may go out of business and they may never reopen. And that would mean I can't carry my son to the movies anymore, a movie theater. I love to go on cruises. Carnival Cruises and Norwegian and Royal Caribbean are all shut down and they could very well go bankrupt. I loved being carried to kids' play places. I used to love to go to Chuck E. Cheese as a kid. That was one of my favorite places to go. Chuck E. Cheese has filed for bankruptcy from coronavirus. Begs me every day, why can't we go to... That's been closed for 7 months, and it may never reopen. All the things I used to love to do with them are getting smaller and smaller and smaller and going away. And you think, all the stuff I loved doing as a kid and the time period I was lucky to grow up in the 1990s. The 1990s was a relatively good, stable, peaceful, and prosperous time period. And I can't say that about the time that I'm raising my kids in. In the 1990s, schools were more integrated than they are today. In the 1990s, more black students attended Ivy League colleges and were accepted to Ivy League colleges than they are today. In the 1990s, we investigated a president endlessly for lying about a sex act. Today, Trump was allowed to run for re-election as the first impeached POTUS in America to ever run for re-election. And his impeachment was not brought up at the first debate, the town hall, or the second debate. All the people around him that I just mentioned who've gone to jail was not brought up at the first debate, the town hall, or the second debate. All the things I mentioned about his financial crimes, his charity, and his university being dissolved for fraud were not brought up at the first debate, town hall, or second debate. It's very hard to say things are getting better for the kids that we're raising. Now, people say that being a parent will change you in ways you can't anticipate. I do believe that. I think that when you're born, you don't know that you're born. And when you're dead, you don't know that you're dead. So if you take away your birth and your death, what's the biggest event that's going to happen in your life? And it's going to be your kids being born. And it's one that you're conscious for. And it's one that you know about. And I can remember my son being born in Minneapolis and the nurse handing him to me. And I was the first person that ever held him. He opened his eyes and they say babies can't see when they're first born. They don't have good vision for a while. But even the first person that he looked at was me because he opened his eyes. And I did feel instantly different. And I'm not taking away from anybody who's not a parent and is not going to be. And it's everybody's choice. There's other things in your life you can feel that way. But people that have kids, they know exactly what I'm talking about. It is something. I can remember in Mad Men, Don Draper talking about when he first had his kids, he didn't feel anything. And it took several years before they started to act like him that he felt something. I didn't feel that way at all. For cheesy terms, fell in love with my son the minute he was born. And I would say the exact same thing about my daughter. She was born. They handed her to me. I'm the first person she looked at again. And it felt amazing. I can remember being a kid in the 90s. And over people would say things like, think of the children. Once you think of the children in this presidential election cycle, I don't hear people talk about kids or what's good for them or what's good for the future, except Joe Biden. Joe Biden will talk about the future, all the promise and hope that he feels. And when he speaks of it, you believe him. You think he means it. And I do believe that he means it. Trump talks about the rioters are going to burn down your house and they're going to kill you. And Black Lives Matter is going to do this and they're going to do that. And none of it is about the hope and promise that Americans should feel about their country every day when they wake up. None of it is about, will your kids have a good environment? He doesn't act like Barron, his youngest child, even exists. He barely talks about him, doesn't spend time with him. His kids, Don Jr. and Eric, I think are mostly money machines to him. They're people that can run his businesses, and that's about the extent he cares about them. Tiffany, he acts like she doesn't even exist. Ivanka, he acts like he wants to sleep with. In the 2016 debates, they asked Hillary Clinton, what is something you admire about Donald Trump? And she said, he looks like a great father. I don't even want to give him that much credit. He looks like a terrible father. But the president, in a way, is the father of the entire nation. And that's what I mean by fatherhood. And when you say, won't you think of the children, you think, won't you think of the citizens? These are the people who look up to you to lead them, to make them feel hopeful about the future and what's going to come. Is there anybody who thinks 2020 was a good year? Is there anybody who feels hopeful about this time that we're in? Even Trump's beloved stock market just went down because Germany just had to shut down an emergency lockdown for coronavirus. It's going to get cold again. Cases are going to spike. The rest of the world knows cases are about to spike. Trump's holding rallies in Omaha, Nebraska, where thousands of people are there to hear him speak, not enforcing that people wear a mask. And then he strands them out in the cold where they have to wait for shuttle buses to come pick them up. This isn't a man who cares about his children. He doesn't care about the citizens of the country he leads. And that is not what America is supposed to be about. We elect our politicians. We tell them what we want them to do. He tells us how he's feeling. When he leaves an interview with Leslie Stahl on 60 Minutes, he stomps out. And the whole thing is about, you're unfair to me, you're mean to me, you're picking on me. This is very rude. I don't want tough questions. I don't want you to ask me things. You don't ask Biden tough questions. When you see him at the town hall with Savannah Guthrie getting defensive and edgy and not liking it, at the first debate, he argued with Chris Wallace endlessly about how unfair they are to him. The IRS is unfair to him. The FBI is unfair to him. The CIA is unfair to him. Chris Wallace is unfair to him. Savannah Guthrie is unfair to him. Leslie Stahl is unfair to him. The media generally is unfair to him. Even Fox News is not loyal enough to this man. And the fact that he and Stahl had a back and forth about what kind of questions he wanted to be asked and what he felt was good to ask him, who cares? It is not our job to protect the president's feelings. Why is it about the way he feels, how he feels and what he wants to hear and what he thinks you can do for him? JFK asked, not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. And that's true, but we need to think of our presidents. Donald Trump thinks, ask me not what I can do for you, but what you can do for me, how you can protect me when 230,000 Americans are dead from coronavirus, when millions are unemployed, when Mitch McConnell rams through a Supreme Court justice and then declares a recess so he's not even attempting to work on the second stimulus package, when people are crying out in the streets, we have nothing. We can't go to kids' play places. We can't go to movie theaters. We can't go on cruises. We can't live the way we lived a year ago. Everything we love is being systematically stripped away and taken from us. And this man is worried about his feelings and the questions he wants to be asked at this time period. The media has done an awful job in showing the everyday lives of citizens that are invisible in his America. They talk about his tweets. They talk about his statements. They talk about his outlandish conspiracy theories. He says Hunter Biden has a laptop that's somehow connected to China and Russia, even though he has accepted $25 million from China in a bank account that we know of, and he owes them tens of millions from a real estate project that Politico exposed back in April, but was not even brought up at the debates. He says Barack Obama spied on him and didn't want him to take office and staged a coup against him for taking office, even though he has said he will not accept the results of the election. And any election he doesn't win is fraudulent and he plans to fight it. And part of the reason he needed Handmaid's Tale in the Supreme Court so bad is because he wants the Supreme Court to settle any election disputes, even though they have no right to do that and it's supposed to go to the Congress. He has spread a lie about Pizzagate and Hillary Clinton running a sex trafficking ring, even though he palled around with Jeffrey Epstein in a real sex trafficking ring that nobody talks about. And he said, I'm going to marry her in a few years to a 10-year-old girl. If that was my daughter, I'd have punched him in the face. That would make me sick to hear a lecherous old pervert talk about a 10-year-old child. He spreads lies about Joe Biden put a hit on SEAL Team 6 to cover up the fact that they didn't really kill Osama bin Laden. This is brazen lies. He questions Biden's mental fitness and says he's senile and he's not fit for the Oval Office, even though Trump displays clear cognitive mental decline on a daily basis. You can watch him in 2016, his speeches. You can watch him today and see a very clear difference. His Twitter account, if it was a regular person, we would call the insane asylum. If your uncle tweets the way that he does, we would want them on an FBI watch list. He says the Obama Justice Department is hopelessly biased and corrupt against him, even as he asked his Attorney General, Bill Barr, to investigate Joe Biden and open an emergency investigation the week before the presidential election in what would clearly be partisan and corrupt. He agrees with QAnon that the deep state is against him, but he never says, why do some people in the FBI not like him, even though they helped him get elected in 2016, and now some of them don't like him? Why has he fired James Comey for the Russia thing, quote unquote? Why has he fired Andrew McCabe, Comey's replacement? Why has he talked about firing Kevin Ray, the current FBI director, the second the election's over with? Why did he fire Jeff Sessions, his hand-picked attorney general, just for recusing himself from the Russia investigation and then actively campaigned against them in Alabama? Why does the CIA not want Trump to be reelected if, in fact, they don't? These are career criminal prosecutors. The FBI goes after criminals. The IRS goes after tax cheats. The CIA goes after enemy agents to America's interests. If they're all against him, why are they against him? Because he's a criminal, he's a tax cheat, and he's an enemy agent. His fans think it's okay that he's in Russia's back pocket, specifically Putin's back pocket, and they think it's okay that he's cozy with Vladimir Putin because Russia's a white supremacist nation and majority Christian. They don't mind that so much. And that's why it's okay that Trump did nothing when Russia put out a bounty on American troops in Afghanistan. He did nothing when they tried to kill Navalny in Germany and poisoned his water bottle. And even though Navalny would be a 10 times better Russian leader than Vladimir Putin, especially for American interest, he has shown no interest in protecting this man or even chastising Putin for trying to kill him. But they think all that's okay because Russia is white and Christian, and it's China that's the real bad guys. Trump's in China's back pocket too. I don't know why anybody would believe that Russia and China are at odds over Trump. Russia and China are always together on everything. At the United Nations, they vote the same way almost always. They back up all the same enemy countries, Iran, Syria, North Korea, Venezuela. They want the same things, a divided, chaotic United States that could collapse into ruin at any moment. They both want power grabs. Russia wants Ukraine back. China wants Taiwan and Tibet back. China's cracking down in Hong Kong. Russia's got their own protests that are forming up in their country. This idea that Russia would be for Trump and China would be against him is a fallacy. There's no evidence. We know this because Trump himself was impeached for a phone call where he called not just Ukraine, because that's all people talked about, but China, and asked them for election help finding dirt on Hunter Biden. If he thought they hated him and he thought they wanted him gone, why would he feel comfortable asking them for election help, revealing the weakness that is Joe Biden, the fear he has of this man, and revealing that to enemies who wanted him out of the office? Then John Bolton relayed a story where Trump was at a dinner with Xi Jinping, and he told him that he wanted him to buy more crops from Midwestern swing states to help his reelection campaign. He thought they wanted him gone and were backing the Democrats. Why would he let him know a weakness was the Midwestern swing states and to buy crops to help him out? Well, you wouldn't, of course. Jared and Ivanka are his closest presidential advisors, and they have countless ties to China. People were surprised Jared Kushner could even get a security clearance because of all the ties he has to China. Trump said he would lift the restrictions on Huawei, the Chinese tech spying conglomerate, the week that they lifted the restrictions on her handbags in China. Trump's closest ally in the Senate is Mitch McConnell, whose wife is a Chinese asset. And then Trump takes Elaine Chao and he puts her as his Secretary of Transportation. Trump talks tough on China about the trade wars and the tariffs and things like that. But what is tough talk worth? His most anti-China advisor, Steve Bannon, always talks tough about China and rings the alarm on them, but he was arrested on the boat of a Chinese billionaire. So what does that show you that the words are worth? China and Russia want a chaotic, divided America, and since Trump's been president, he's pushed Ethiopia and Kenya and some of our allies in Latin America into China's arms. He's practically encouraged it. He has said nothing in favor of the Hong Kong protest. He has done nothing to help the Hong Kong protesters. Is this a president who is getting tough on China and is trying to hurt them in any way? Then you have the fact that he owes tens of millions of dollars to China over a construction project that's going to come due in the middle of his second term, if he has one. Then you have the fact that he literally has a Chinese bank account with $25 million put in it while he's president. This is a man who is not just a Russian asset. And the fact that I have to say, well, he's not just a Russian asset, as though it would be okay if he were a Russian asset, but this is not just a Russian asset, but a Chinese asset as well. I can't justify to my kids why a man like this was reelected so he could systematically destroy the United States from the inside, so that his debts to China and Russia and the money he's gotten, $400 million, which will come due during his second term, he saves himself and wrecks the country on their behalf and is totally beholden to them to do whatever he would like to do. Republicans and Democrats have had our disagreements before. I've cataloged them endlessly in this podcast, but this is the first time between Trump and McConnell and Rand Paul and a handful of others that I can honestly say the Republicans are not just trying to hurt Democrats and liberals in the United States, but America. They do not care about their voters. They do not care about the people in these states. Red states are the most polluted states in the country, and they want to repeal more environmental regulations and make it even easier to pollute them. Red states are the poorest states in this country, and they want to do away with the social safety net. Red states are the sickest states in this country, and they can't wait to repeal Obamacare and get rid of the part about pre-existing conditions being protected. He said they'll protect it, but if it's after the election, you have no guarantees to hold this man accountable, and he's lied 20,000 times, a lot of it about healthcare and coronavirus, which he's been wrong about over and over. Red states are the least educated states in the country, and Republicans hate education. They call it government schools instead of public schools. He's put a secretary of education in who doesn't believe public schools should exist and has funneled money into private school choice and private school vouchers, the same schools that my son could go to and be thrown out for any reason because they're not under the Civil Rights Act of 1964. They could even say it's race related and it would make no difference whatsoever. Even in the most liberal state in the country, the heart of the resistance, Los Angeles, and the city that's the heart of the resistance, Los Angeles, California. Red states have more single mothers and out-of-wedlock mothers and teen mothers than anywhere else in the country, and they want to make abortion illegal in those states. They know that the number one indicator of poverty will be having a child you cannot afford, and they want to force more women to have kids they do not want and cannot pay for and cannot take care of to forcibly give birth, and then the same women, they want to deny them WIC and food stamps and money from the government and any government assistance, and if they need that stuff, well, they're just trash. Why did they have kids they couldn't afford? Republicans don't care about their voters, and they don't care about this country, and it is horrible for our children to be watching this message. Our children, millennials, are the first generation in American history to be sicker than their parents, were not projected to live as long because of obesity, but also general healthcare decline, general environmental factors are getting worse, stress is getting worse. We're the first generation in American history to not be as wealthy as our parents. The starting salary for someone today getting out of college is about what it would have been for baby boomers. Adjusted for inflation, a little bit worse. Millennials are the first generation in American history to be less educated than their parents because college tuition has gone up sky high. The price of a college degree has a worse markup than cosmetics, prescription drugs, or movie theater popcorn. And Republicans say, just don't go to college because that's where you get indoctrinated into liberal thought to begin with. If they truly believe what they say about wanting everybody in America to be rich, why do they encourage so many people not to go to college when the median salary for someone who goes to college is $30,000 more a year than somebody who doesn't? And even higher disparity when you get into graduate degrees. Put forth no plan to make college affordable. Maybe they'd be happy if only the wealthy could attend college, and then it would be only their kids who have the good jobs and wouldn't have to compete with anybody else. These are not things that I see headed in the right direction for my kids, and they're part of Generation Alpha. After Generation Y or Millennials, there's Generation Z, which is inheriting a bad economy, a polluted planet, grossly unequal healthcare and education system. But then even after that, there's Generation Alpha, who are the kids. And there's not a single person in Generation Alpha who says, why won't Joe Biden protect fracking? Why is Joe Biden saying he wants to get rid of oil and gas? These are people who want to live. They want to be on this planet for the next century. And they can't afford a Republican Party and a Republican Senate and a Republican president that pretends climate crisis isn't happening so 1,000 people who work in oil and gas can have jobs. They can find other jobs. They can do other things that don't kill the rest of us. The majority of this country needs a clean environment to conduct business. For every fossil fuel job you gain, you lose 10 other jobs. In farming, when there's a terrible drought or the crops are poisoned from pollution. In ranching, for the same reasons, and cows are literally dropping dead from exhaustion or heat stroke. In fishing, where the waters are polluted and the fish are dying left and right, as happened after the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, when thousands of shrimp and fish farmers were like, we can't even sell the crap we're pulling out of the water. There's shrimp with tumors on them. In real estate, where you need a good environment to be able to sell houses, sell land. Timber, where the trees, if there's forest fires raging for months at a time, can't have that industry going. Forestry, park rangers, and even something like tech, because why on God's earth would Amazon want to build a brand new headquarters in a town that has poison drinking water or sludge or the environment sucks or it's getting wiped out by hurricanes every other week? Florida is sinking into the ocean from flooding. California is being consumed by wildfires. Texas has record drought when it's not getting battered by hurricanes. The Gulf Coast gets hit by massive hurricanes like you haven't seen. Gulf Shores, Alabama had to be evacuated 2 weeks ago, and there's more hurricanes brewing. Colorado wildfires were only put out because of an unprecedented snowstorm that hit it. Minneapolis winters are pounded by snowstorms, and the East Coast is now getting more and more hurricanes. This is a planet that is screaming to people. Solar power your homes and drive electric cars and do away with plastic packaging, all the crap that is killing us. We desperately need wind and solar and renewable energy and safer packaging for food and water and everything that we use it for than plastic allows. We need these changes. And if you don't think of that because, oh, well, I need a guy in an oil rig to have a job, somebody I've never met. Oh, the coal miners, what about them? If you're 60 plus and you're defending people you don't know having a job over the future of your kids and your grandkids being able to survive on this planet, you're not thinking of the children. And I posted a question anonymously to Quora where I said, what do you think of the children in this presidential election? Or do you think about them at all when you're voting? And the first five or six answers were from conservatives that said, yes, I think about the children when I need to protect them from abortion, when I need to protect them from the Green New Deal, which will kill all their jobs. And this is what they were concerned with. In their minds, they have to somehow protect children that are already born from the horrors of abortion or being able to choose it from themselves one day. And they have to protect kids who desperately want to be able to survive on planet Earth in the future from a Green New Deal that will guarantee they're able to do that. So in their minds, they're able to twist it into low tax rates, low environmental regulations, heavy restrictions on social freedoms from gay marriage to abortion. Somehow that's in the best interest of the children, to make them ashamed of who they are and hide in a closet like Lindsey Graham has his entire life, or to keep tax rates so low that their schools aren't properly funded and they don't have access to good, proper education and government services the way that baby boomers enjoyed in the post-World War II utopia, where both parties generally agreed it was a good idea to fund the government and social safety net and to protect them from environmental regulations that are going to make it easier to breathe air, clean water, and make it to where they are not constantly fleeing for their lives from hurricanes or tornadoes or snowstorms or forest fires or a planet that is moaning and groaning, please do something about it before I wipe you all out and expel you, because the planet will be here, but it's the people on it that will suffer. My mom told me about the last couple of years that she taught school, and you would have young boys coming in the classroom and they would say, build the wall, to the Mexican kids. If there was ever a disagreement with Mexican kids, they would scream, build the wall, or chant that in their face. To some of the girls, they would say, grab them by the pussy and make them uncomfortable. These are children being influenced by the president of the United States. And even now you can see kids that are grown up in conservative households willing to defend Trump over anything else. They can't enjoy Star Wars because Rogue One, an excellent movie, is somehow against Trump. They can't enjoy the NFL games because the players take a knee. They can't enjoy the nightly news because that's biased against Trump. And they can't enjoy PBS Kids because that's indoctrinating them into a liberal mindset. Things are slowly being stripped away, as children are being brought up to question the FBI and the CIA and if they should even pay taxes at all, because that's what the president is questioning constantly. Why are they being so mean to the president? Is what children are thinking about a man who is wealthy and powerful, one of the most powerful men on the planet. They're thinking, why can't he get a break as they go hungry or they go to a school that hasn't been properly funded for years? I think he is a bad role model for our nation's children, and I don't think he thinks about children. And in fact, the only time that we've seen him talk to somebody young was a phone call where he said, your belief in Santa Claus is pretty marginal at 7 years old, right? He can't even talk to children without saying something like Santa Claus isn't real. He doesn't even know how to interact with them. He doesn't think about them. He doesn't care about them. People over 65 that are voting for him, they're not thinking about them. They're trying to cling on to an America they want to bring back when they were kids and it was pre-integration. They can remember that happening and they'd like to reverse it. But this is what's so scary. It could be taken away in the blink of an eye. Abortion has been legal the entirety of my lifetime, almost 50 years ago. The entirety of my lifetime, people have had the right to choose, and we could plunge them back into the dark ages when they're not able to. The entirety of my lifetime, schools have been integrated, but they're less integrated today than they were when I was in school 20 years ago, and that could get even worse. The entirety of my lifetime, America has been the number one economy in the world and relatively low unemployment rates, relatively peaceful and prosperous, and never even floated the idea of true civil unrest that could change when the president refuses to accept the results of the election and calls on his supporters to commit acts of violence. If the president asks for violence and declares anybody who voted against him the enemy of the people, for the first time in my lifetime, I will not be able to guarantee the safety of my kids. We should all be worried about this, and we should do everything we can to vote him out and also the Senate that needs to go Democratic again so we could feel something. Speaking of the children, I asked my son what he thinks of when he sees Trump on television every day, and he's always on television, and he is always telling people some of the things that I've talked about so far in this podcast. And I say, how does that make you feel? What do you think? He says, well, I like Biden because he's soothing. He says, Biden reminds me of Santa Claus. He has nice blue eyes and frosty white hair, and he seems like a good man. I'm paraphrasing, but he basically said Biden looks like he would give you an ice cream cone or a candy or something, a nice grandfather type. Trump seems like the grandfather that would scold you for being late or rude or talking too loud or running through the hallways or getting on his nerves. Trump seems like the grandfather whose house you'd want to leave because you're not comfortable being there, while Biden's the one that you love going to see every weekend. Basically said that Trump scares him because he could end the world. He said the planet will be extinct. He is extremely concerned with the environment. When we go to the park, he'll go and pick up some of the trash that he sees around. He hates it when people just dump their trash in the park, and a lot of people do, unfortunately. Even in California, it's like they just don't care. He is concerned about a world where people dump trash on the ground and don't pick it up, and the planet. Time a month ago when we could walk outside and not even see the sun, because that's how bad the forest fires were, that it blocked out the sun, and you could look directly at the sun. At noon, it was sunset at noon, darkness in the middle of the day. You could look at the sun without sunglasses and your eyes are protected because that's how thick the smoke clouds were. It is scary for a child to have their school stripped away from them and to have to do Zoom video classes for over a year because they can't even be around their friends and they can't see them. And when we go to the park and other kids want to play near each other, parents grab their kids and take them away because you literally could catch a disease from playing with those children. You can't see your friends. You can't go to school. You can't really go to the park when the other kids are there. You can't go to Disneyland because that's been shut down almost the entirety of this year. Earlier in the year, we had booked a trip to Legoland. We were supposed to go in April, then it was going to be May, then it was going to be July, then it was going to be August. Now it's been canceled till next year, and who knows if they'll even reopen next year. It is a nightmare for children growing up in this America to be deathly afraid of catching a disease or that they could be in an environment that is not stable. Whether you're in California with the forest fires or Gulf Shores, Alabama, South Alabama, the heart of the Republican base, where Trump can go to Mobile and he can have 10,000 people show up to a big rally for him. They've been battered by hurricanes, literally flee Gulf Shores, Alabama, and evacuate. For children, this is not a stable world that we're bringing them up in. And I worry about what it does to them. And I worry about having a president who, from my son, and we don't talk politics in front of him. We try to shield him from that as much as we possibly can. But it's unavoidable. And it is always for something negative. When he calls whole countries bad, this is where my wife is from. And my son would wonder, why is he banning Nigerian people from coming to the United States? Why is he calling where she's from bad? Why is he trying to strip away the immigration diversity lottery that brought her to this country? Why is he having to do school through a video camera? Why has he never physically been in the same room with his teacher, never met her, never been able to touch her, and hasn't been able to get a hug from his friends in 7 months? There's no way that that's not affecting children. And I'm sure that it's bad for the adults too. And that's why I want you to do something a little unusual for this podcast episode. I've never asked people to do this, and I wish I could play the song for you, but I'm not sure that I have the rights. Kacey Musgrave sings a song called Rainbow. I want you to play it at the end of this podcast. And as you do that, I want you to think about everybody you know who's had coronavirus or died from it. In the last 6 months, 4 people I know, mostly my mom's friends and people her age, have died. Some of them from coronavirus. Some of them were not diagnosed with it, but it might have been a contributing factor. But 4 people have passed away in 6 months, which is very unusual. And you can think about the people who might have literally had coronavirus, or you can think about people who might have been affected by the isolation and the depression and the not being able to get to a doctor or being afraid to go to a doctor during the last 6 months because they don't want to catch coronavirus, and that could have made their health worse, could have let some things slip by the radar. I want you to think of everyone you've lost in the last 6 months, and I want you to think of everything you've lost in the last 6 months. All the things I talked about that have been shut down and closed or are not going to reopen or have gone away, and the endless retail bankruptcies from Brooks Brothers to Papyrus to JCPenney. I want you to think about everything that you have lost this year and how awful it has been. And I want you to listen to Kacey Musgrave's Rainbow as you think about it. And I want you to know that it's going to be all right if we can get Biden and the Democrats back in the Senate. And we can take this country back. And more than anything, I want you to go vote. And I want you to get everybody you know to go vote. And make sure that they vote Democratic as much as you can. We have to save the future for our children. And it is literally that important. Vote blue. Save America. Save the dream.